man, various people who were trying to bring these people in, thinking that it would send them the government, particularly the working sections, working classes, whether she took that step, I can't say. Also whether, considering the talent she had in the cabinet, she wanted the MSSP people to come and strengthen the caliber of the cabinet also, while at the same time winning over the working class groups. Also, I don't know. Those are the things I how can I say what she was thinking, but that's what I feel.
What does C.P.T. Silva say about his eventual crossover? I mean, one might have expected him to cross over at that point, but he waited for quite some time before crossing over.
Yes, I think he was not knowing whether his passing over would be effective or not, I suppose. Eh?
Mm-hmm. In fact, that was fairly neatly engineered, wasn't it? The defeat in Parliament?
Yes. It was very good. I think he did cross at a point of time, then it would be really effective, rather than crossing over and fighting from the other side.
Who engineered that?
The engineers.
I mean, very. I know they had to call two UNP members from London.
Yes.
The timing was important, wasn't it?
They were thinking any minute.
And even to get C.P.T. Silva over, I mean, I suppose the lobbying had to be done.
A lot of talk had to be done,
I was told by Nancy, so I think that Sarath Vijayasingam, T.T. Silva, and yes.
The whole host of fellows were very well from that side. Uh-huh. No, it was very flat, otherwise you can't do it. In the sense of being people who were abroad.
Mm.
And I think some of the delegates were still abroad.
Any more, right? And Bernard. And what is your...
We'll go on till what time? 5:30?
Another 10 minutes?
Yeah. I got to get to temple to the gate. Not to temple to the woodlands.
If I could go back in time, I'm interested in a picture of old D.S. Did he have what one might call a charismatic appeal?
What's that?
In a sense of being like, say, a Sukarno or someone, you know, a real popular appeal.
But he was never the man who went for the Sukarno type of politics.
Mm-hmm.
What you call emotion, revolution type of thing, he never went for that. He was a matter-of-fact man,
mm-hmm.
and never took the people beyond a certain line of expectation and things like that, you see. But wherever he went, people really felt he was sincere and they really loved him.
Mm-hmm.
He had a very direct, rough approach and very direct approach. The rugged man whom the villagers understood. But not the type of, not Sukarno type. Sukarno holds a crowd for, you see, a frenzy they say, no?
Mm-hmm.
That, not that type of thing.
No, Riggins, in writing about this, the early period of the UNP, 48-56, says that policy was a bit of hodgepodge and not like lacking in specific direction. But I wonder what comments you have to make on that.
What is the bedrock of policy of Mr. D.S. Senna? Bedrock of policy of Mr. D.S. Senna is
agriculture.
And today, if you read anything, even from the Marxist country, their experience is that without a good agricultural base, industrialization or development of an economy of a country is not possible. That is scientific today. At that stage, a lot of these Marxist friends of ours here are talking of going for heavy industry, basic industry, this industry, collectivization of land. They were simply mouthing the slogans that were mouthed there in Russia or somewhere, which have been proved to be ultimately wrong. You take Poland, you take many of those countries, they have de-collectivized the collectivized farms. That's the position today. And Russia herself has found to her cost that building up an economy at the expense of an agricultural base is a terrible weakness in an economy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the position. So, Riggins or anybody may be talking all this type of thing. Now America is saying something else. Now they are saying something else. Now they are saying you must build a broad agricultural base from which can result lots of other things.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of years of experience. So, the UNP policy was a policy, Mr. DSNAC's policy was building the agriculture and the food base.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't say at all Mr. DSNAC went into a form of theoretical studies and formulated these things. He instinctively went for it. And looking backwards, I think that is a correct policy. The heaviest investment of the government went in for that.
Wasn't he himself inspired in part by what one might call a sort of kind of romantic pull towards the ancient
Egyptian? But and I say it is absolutely necessary. Because you can't get a response in a country unless you link it up with a past, a glorious past that people think it was glorious.
Mm-hmm.
You see? It is only then that you can evoke enthusiasm and response in a people. Mr. DSN, I have a reason for that. That he was able to give the correct direction to the development of the economy of this country and from the when you look up the stage at which he took up place and made the heaviest investments of the government go into irrigation and agriculture, supporting, opening up large extent of land, moving people into those areas and things like that. The other thing is, unless you link up this type of activity in a manner of getting the response of the people, you see, greatness of the people or something like that, the glorious past being revived or something, you won't get the people going in for this. You take Russia, and people think that Russia, their understanding, was a country which went on scientific Marxist ideology.
Uh-huh.
What did Stalin do during the war and during his period? He brought in all the nationalistic concepts of Russia. He brought in all the nationalistic concepts of Russia. Russia, not international concepts.
Mm-hmm.
He brought in them. Nationalistic concepts. Russia bringing up the ancient the war heroes of the time of the Tsars and all was brought back. No?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because people respond to that type of thing. So when you say didn't he think back on a romantic level, I say that is exactly the key that opened up the response of the people.
Uh-huh. Did he publicize this? I mean, did he propaganda on this line? Did he make propaganda on this line?
No, Mr. Jason, like I told you, was every man who made this type of propaganda. But I think people... One thing of
one factor of considerable interest with regard to this economic policy is that at the intellectual level today, Marxists have built up a reputation that they are the only people who understand economics.
Hmm.
Why hasn't the UNP tried to articulate what one might call a popular economic doctrine?
Why there are now two, the role of our manifesto, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
What is the statement? You get a statement of policy there? Very clearly stated.
Now, I was thinking that from the tactical point of view, it might be valuable to push this line a bit more and to challenge a monopoly which NM has.
The monopoly, I say, we go to real facts.
Yes.
Their whole concept of heavy industry, basic industry, all this sort of thing is now collapsing in the developing countries. You see, without a full base, without an agricultural deep, without a deep agricultural base, no industrial development can be sustained. They were all mouthing what was said in Russia in the past. Now they've admitted it. The world has moved a lot from their concepts. Russia herself is moving out. The tripartite profit motive is coming to Russia now, even in their own formulation of economic policies. You see?
No.
So we are living at such an age.
I wonder, in fact, whether Ms. D.S.N. Nayakar was looking ahead and saw that Ceylon could not, in the future, rely on Burma and other countries because those countries wouldn't have enough.
I don't know whether he saw that far, but certainly he saw that food was necessary. And we had the capacity if we went it at a bit. Quite possibly now, I can't say that we saw all these things. These are also a new problem that has been thrown up now with the world, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Because rice was fairly cheaply available at that time. You know, we didn't have the Vietnam War. But it was a very far-sighted policy.
Yeah, but apart from this, I wonder if the UNP did enough in the way of planning. I know there was a six-year plan, but was that really a plan? It was rather a collection of individual ministries.
I'll ask you, Mr. Dr. Roberts, which country ever had planning like this at that time? When you are talking, you must talk in the context of things.
No, but India
did. The Indian National Congress did a type of plan. That was also theoretical planning. You see? Then, after they formed the government, they had this five-year plans coming out. Prior to the five-year plans, the Indian National Congress had some type of planning with Nehru. I read a book, I can't put my finger onto that. But there, the concept of a plan, the earlier plan, as you say, the six-year plan was just a
collection of
things, and the agriculture, Mr. Douglas Nayakar's ministry plan was the real core of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
But that was mentioned in that book as one of the first attempts, not in Ceylon, but in the whole of Southeast Asia of planning. In that context, really the concept of planning was taken on by countries which were not communist, non-communist countries after the war. After the last war, not before. Now it has become a part of planning of everybody.
I presume you favor a mixed economy.
Yeah.
How far do you think the state should intervene? I mean, in what spheres?
It's very difficult, I think, Dr. Roberts, with some experience I'm saying. It's very difficult for one to say this year, and draw a hard time fast line.
According to each situation.
My experience is, one, it's a very pragmatic approach that you have to have.
Mm-hmm.
In a country like Ceylon, you can't say basic industry, this and this, is very difficult. There are certain industries, no doubt, like the steel cooperation thing, some of those things which government has to go into. But this hard type of formulation that you get is something that may not work in every country.
How far have the corporations answered insofar as giving greater drive and flexibility?
Corporations are really meant to achieve that.
Mm.
And some of the corporations are doing that and can do that. But they have also become places insulated from pressure control and all sorts of controls for people to get fat salaries and comfortable living. That is not the purpose of a corporation.
Yes, but on the other hand, don't you think that sometimes pressure controls go too far and they tie up the corporation?
That is why this concept, this cooperation is created. Now if we examine the cooperation, we find they are going the other way now.
Yes.
They have to balance somewhere now. Corporations can tend to, no doubt it's a type of economic organization which will not have inhibitions of a treasury.
Mm.
But it also take a private organization. Private organizations will have all economies inbuilt in the thing. They can't simply waste the shareholders' money. So, I feel they can achieve a thing, and they are, some of them are achieving. But because they are also considering themselves to be public, government will write this off, write that off, What sort of things do you see?
Waste.
Unrecorded. Portion of interview. In giving me some background information pertaining to his career, Mr. Banda said that after getting a general degree at University College, he was appointed a district. He got a post as a district revenue officer around 38-39, being among the first batch of DROs. The DROs replaced the RMs and Corales, etc. The DROs were appointed on a communal basis, in that Kandyans were sent to Kandyan districts, Tamils to Tamil districts, etc. Training involved a common program on a few subjects like health. You know, the DROs are brought together for 2 weeks and given some training on one subject, then sent back to Kachri, then brought again for 2 weeks training on another subject. But the basic training was at individual Kachris. He was a probational DRO for 1.5 years and stationed at Anuradhapura. He was then sent to Nuwarelia district. He resigned he left the service around 42-43 for personal and other reasons and went back home. His intention was to enter law college. But the law college, but he had to wait 2-3 months before the academic year of law college began. In the meanwhile, the bribery commission had reported, sent in its report, and for 4 members of the state council guilty of bribery. Mr. Banda mentioned the names of the 4 individuals, but I'm afraid I cannot recall these names. Well, one was for Nuwarelia, with by-election in the offing. Mr. Banda found that many people were subject to pressure from many people from his DRO's division. They wanted him to come forward as an MP. He was reluctant to do so and was undecided. He then came to Colombo and met the MP who represented the Porugavele area, Mr. Siripala Samarakodi. And Samarakodi told him that DS would like him to come forward. Apparently, DS had 2 candidates in mind for this area, for this constituency: Banda himself and Unambua from Kotmale. Banda added that DS knew the background. he had met Mr. Banda some time ago when on one of his agricultural tours, and had learned that Banda was going to
resign.
The reasons for this course of action. Well, eventually he was prevailed. He decided to come forward, and he won the election. He got support from Sripala Samankari, D.S. And various other important politicians of the time. These were all figures in the National Congress and later in the UNP, but they did not support him on a party basis. It was on a personal basis. James Ratnam, however, had a block support from the Ceylon Indian Congress. It was not that he was their candidate, but that that the CIC adopted him. In those areas, the CIC was a force to be reckoned with. However, Mr. Banda was soon displaced on an election petition, whereupon he continued with his program of getting through law college. Well, he got through the first and second advocates exams, but before the third came up, Ceylon had got his new constitution and elections were being held under the Sodbury constitution. Thus, though he had gone 85% of the way, he decided to contest the Maturatra seat under the UNP banner, and since then he has been caught up in this business. Caught up in this business with an inverted commas typist. He represented Maturatra till all along, but the 1959 Delimitation Commission altered this and it became the Hanguranketa seat. But in 1965, he switched to his home area, Polgahavela, that is the Naram Mala seat.
That's all.
End of interview with M.D. Banda on the 1st of October, 1967.